We're going to call the regular session for Wednesday, June 26, 2019, to order. It's 5:30 p.m. Council members present are Connie Breeze, Mike Shields, Don Greiner, Mike Harper, myself, Dan Richer. If you'd please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Are there any added agenda items? Okay, so we're going to move right into public comments. Do we have any public comment people? If we do, please step forward and let us know your name and address. We're going to take in number six is our consent agenda, which includes the approval of the minutes for June 12, 2019, the reimbursements for council and staff, and OLCC application from Gordy's Truck Stop. I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, so we have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, so consent agenda is done. We paid the bills. Next, we have a presentation from the Deschutes County Health about tobacco licensing. If you would take and please step forward, and you know, we would be very happy to hear from you. This is like a long presentation. You guys both got hydro flasks here. You know.
I will say, I'm 10 days with an annoying cough, so.
I wish you the very best.
I always have water if I'm speaking somewhere, just in case.
We won't take up too much of your time.
I'm Tom Kuhn. I'm Community Health Manager at Deschutes County Health Services.
And I'm Karen Art. I'm the tobacco.
With the tobacco reduction among teens, we're about to launch.
Okay. Well, thanks for having us here this evening. We have a short PowerPoint presentation to share with you. And we have a timeline that I'll go over briefly as well, but we were here approximately 2 years ago with a similar presentation. I think I recognize at least a couple of you.
I was here.
You were there too. Okay, so there's a few people that were there at the time. So actually, I'll turn it over to Karen and kick us off.
Were all three of you here then, or two of you?
No, just me.
Just you. Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't present at that time. I was just sitting back for supporting.
Update of some of the youth prevalence data and why we're here again, discussing the importance of our tobacco retail license. But there were a couple other studies. So our tobacco usage rate for Deschutes County, you can see in the blue is 2016, orange is 2018 data, and the state in gray is actually 2018 data as well. So what we're seeing here in Deschutes County is that declining, which sounds great, but we're seeing a rise in vaping, so we have a rate from vaping. Our concern with this is the data coming out nationally is showing that kids using e-cigarettes, vaping, are more, as well as dual use, so about 7 out of 10 studies are coming out, conventional and the e-cigarette usage.
Okay, this is the timeline I was talking about. We started this project approximately in early 2016. And so along the timeline was fall 2017, where we made presentations to the various cities in Deschutes County and requested letters of support at those presentations. We received letters of support from Lapine, Sisters, and Bend, but we did not receive a letter of support from Redmond. They kind of took a stance, kind of a wait and see what the county decides to do. But at that time, we weren't comfortable going to the commissioners and saying we only got support from three of the four cities in the county. So, and also at that time, our main champion for the project was no longer able to work with us on it, and then we knew that one of the Deschutes County Commissioner positions would change for sure, and so we were trying to regroup and figure out where to go with things, and then we hit a point where there was so much turnover in council memberships that we were being asked to return again and present again on tobacco retail licensure to all the cities. And so this is the beginning of us basically starting over what we were doing in fall 2017. And our goal is to attempt to get letters of support from all the cities and then return to the commissioners, Deschutes County commissioners, and see if they're willing to support a countywide tobacco retail licensure policy, which of course, as I said, really is dependent on getting buy-in from all the cities as well.
So, components of an effective tobacco retail license. Currently, in the state of Oregon, you do not have to have a license to sell tobacco products. A license would basically allow for us to, it would provide for enforcement and also would provide a monetary fine or some sort of, those that violate the policy and break the law of selling to minors. So really those are kind of the big components of a tobacco retail license.
Just minor decoy inspection literally means that it'd be like an undercover underage person going there and attempting to purchase the tobacco products.
Studies are showing now, we knew that tobacco retail licenses were effective with decreasing access. We are seeing studies that have recently come out that it's doing the same thing as well. So it is reducing that access. As long as it's effective in terms of having high enough fees for enforcement, so making sure that there's that ability to go in and identifies what retailers exist. And there's, you know, if a store knows, or if kids know that they can go to a certain store that is they're selling to minors, the moral thing and not selling minors is now at a disadvantage because there are stores that are selling to minors and the key. So now what store do you think you're going to go back to if they're only getting an inspection, if that from OHA or an inspection? That inspection is pretty inconsistent. You get inspected compared to it's just a snippet of the population. Last year, or I guess 2017 to 2018, Lapine had minors and it was an e-cigarette product. 2016, we conducted a retailer assessment. So we had 19 businesses that participated in this assessment. And so there was questions that were asked regarding their support for tobacco retail licensing, whether they, reducing access to minors. So the results came out that the majority of retailers state they have had minors, that approximately half of owners and managers interviewed do very little to train frontline staff, and then the majority said TRL would not. More findings have showed that they also supported tobacco retail licensing if the license, if you could revoke the license of businesses that sold to minors, supporting the sale of tobacco within 1,000 feet. In the fall of 2017, we conducted key informant interviews with elected officials across Deschutes County. So there was 8 elected officials like yourself in this interview. So it asked questions based off of potential tobacco policy, hiring a tobacco license, finding businesses, restricting the location within 1,000-foot barrier, prohibiting the sale of flavored tobacco, and requiring limits on sizing assessment. We found that there was requiring all businesses to have a retail license and find restricting the location of businesses selling within 500 feet and requiring all businesses to post.
So, and this is similar, of course, to what we shared a couple years ago. Some of the costs had to be recalculated with cost of living increases and so forth. And we came up with 5 different options of a license cost. And each one has different things, such as the number of compliance inspections and the number of minor decoy inspections, and then the amount of FTE that could be devoted to operating a program like this. It wouldn't require like one full-time person, but it would require portions of different people, including a environmental health specialist who's, you know, our restaurant inspectors, that would be the person that would do the routine inspections, because it's very similar to what they do when they go out to their restaurants to inspect. And so based on what we can do, we came up with the different fees, which range anywhere from in option one, $568 to $79 a year in option five. Of course, the more expensive the license, the more work we can get done and make it a more thorough project. However, there are different options that could be performed where it wouldn't be quite as burdensome on the cost to the business. So it would be nice definitely being able to do the compliance inspections in addition to the minor decoy inspections. Our hope when we go back to the commissioners is that we can, you know, maybe one might be viewed as too high of a cost, but maybe option two might be something that seems a little more reasonable and yet enables us to do routine inspections in addition to the decoy inspections. So that's where we came up with those different amounts, because we want to be able to provide options for the commissioners to decide. And also, when we request a letter of support from you, if you think you would recommend a certain option as well. So, and that, I think, takes us to the last slide here.
It won't stretch. So I just wanted to say that in addition to being a volunteer, I've also applied that to a mom and pop store that is only open more hours, more days, and that rate is going to go down. But today, 5 days a week, how much of an impact would it? The thing that I want to also mention in support, one of the reasons we're so concerned about vaping is that the concentration of nicotine can vary significantly.
I'm assuming that the costs are based on hoping that the license fee will pay for the program to be.
Just making our best guess of the amount of time it might need. It could come down to it that it was actually, you know, we didn't really need to stick that much time into it. I'm guessing most likely we're probably underestimating some of the time that'll need to be put into it. It's a starting point for us to try to get our best idea.
Also, something about where posters were placed. Was that not part of it, that they were? Because they're younger kids,
yeah.
Placing them lower.
I'm not going to be looking at that because it's below their eye level.
That's something that was going to be included in the licensing as moving.
Currently, it is not included, but it could always be included. Plug-in policies, so our tobacco retail license would be the all-encompassing, those additional barriers, including like 1,000 feet.
Nobody should smoke. However, tobacco is a legal product. Drinks cause obesity, early death. Where's this going to go?
If I can address
doing that by selling that product, which is a legal producer, the big tobacco companies that will still get passed down to the end.
You does have a fee that they have to pay to sell alcohol products.
And that, like this, so like you just pointed out, two more.
And I
that we keep going.
When you mentioned things like soda and sugary drinks, I want to state that this is not a tax. It's not like a, so the soda would be more of a tax based off of, and then the fee. So the retailers are receiving, you know, from having a tobacco retail license.
Excuse me, but ordering the retailer to pay.
The goal is to not have those penalties. So, you know, stores that are illegally selling to, they may have that moral choice of their willing, other, retailers that are getting caught selling to minors, not because they want to, because of lack of training. So this will provide, so it, you know, there is a benefit to that. So instead of, you know, having an annual fee compared to having a $1,000 fee, plus, you know, I think it goes up to $4,000 for your, you know, second. Really our goal is to not go in there as a punitive, like we're going to make operations. Really it is an education component, as well as be getting consistent enforcement. You don't want that youth access.
One of the things that concerns me is the enforcement issue. inspections of restaurants might possibly be the first. That bothers me. I see a lot of money being spent. Enforcement, that may not be necessary in my opinion. I'm looking to at the small mom and pop store. Right now the state's looking at about, what is it, 30%? Mm-hmm. And you add that, and seeing that it's turned into the, I was wondering what the proportion versus the amount that it's gonna cost for license off if they just discontinue the cigarettes at all. High fees, in my opinion. And I'm not one that smoked. I never have smoked, and I don't intend to. I used to sell alcohol by the drink, too, but I don't drink, and I don't stand there and hand some of what's going on. And you might like to know, too, that San Francisco just passed an ordinance against vaping. Something. I would like to see it. These license fees are pretty high.
That's why we came up with some different options. And we know it's definitely broad range. You know, there's obviously higher the more we can do, lower the less we can do. But at least having some sense of control over knowing who's selling the products is really helpful to.
Tax, this is a shot in the dark of what it's going to cost. You're saying 27 cents an out in the dark. We approve this, everybody passes. How many thousands of stores is that? Do you have any idea how many stores sell?
I'm not sure. I can tell you here in Deschutes County, who's to say the consistency of stores getting that year or the next year compared to not getting an inspection for 5+.
My daughter did those sting operations years ago. Never heard nicotine given having actual cardio, different things.
You know, this could be a situation that in 34, this stage of limbo, and we're seeing very similar side effects. So there is some concern in terms of, you know, what is this going to look like long term, as well as, you know, that long term.
When you also speak to the children's homes and.
So I have a couple of questions. One is you utilize the word vaping very liberally. And at some point or another, are we discussing tobacco-based products that contain nicotine rather than just vaping products that are glycerin-based with flavor, because there's plenty of vaping products?
So we are talking about vaping. What we are seeing some of these vaping, because there is some, the right now through the FDA is not need to be regulated through the FDA. So a lot of the products that are available are not.
How would you ever specify whether this was a nicotine product or not a nicotine product if you are basing this on tobacco?
Now the product would include the e-cigarettes or the delivery system.
Problem, it's the nicotine in the product. So just someone that's just vaping or vaporizing or whatever they do that doesn't have nicotine in it, you're saying this would not be regulated, or this would be regulated?
It would be regulated as of right now.
So then you would be regulating things of tobacco that don't even have tobacco in them?
If it's listed as a system, yes.
Okay. My next thing is, will this generate some form of, when you provide a licensure to businesses, will this provide the ability for some form of tax on it, like as in you pay gas tax, you pay, you know, gas stations are licensed, you know? I mean, is this something that now the city as a whole would tax, the state would tax, the county would tax? There would be no ability for them to put like a 3% tax on, when someone's licensed, there would be no ability for the county to tax nicotine products like we tax cigarettes. So you're saying that the county as an individual would not be able to tax this? That's my next thing, my last thing is, the TRL fees that you would impose would be based on a straight across the board county level, or they would vary due to city per city, because some cities require a lot more monitoring than other cities.
That fee across Deschutes County for consistent enforcement across the board.
Questions? Thank you so very much.
So actually, one thing we left out to conclude this is, we appreciate your time here and hearing some of the different opinions. Our request would still be, if you'd be willing to provide a letter of support for tobacco retail licensure policy, which then would be addressed to the Deschutes County Commissioners when we go back to ask them that same question again.
Right, but you just stated that it wouldn't be solely for tobacco. You want us to support any form of any substance that goes through a vaporizing device?
Products as defined as a tobacco product.
Again, well, correct, but that's what I'm saying is you're classifying non-nicotine substances as being a tobacco product because they go through a tobacco dispensing device or whatever they use.
These definitions would be, it would be defined as what the federal government defines as a tobacco product, or not going in and defining specific, like that's a tobacco product, that's not. Most likely, if they are selling products that, because these products are not fully regulated through, or some, some products out there that do have nicotine in them that claim that they don't. But most likely, these retailers would probably have products that they're selling with nicotine and without, like a vape.
Correct, but you're saying that you would regulate even the non-nicotine substances.
It would be defined by what a tobacco product is.
Will you be providing this council with the definition of what?
I can provide that.
Thank you so much.
I'm lying that they have on this.
Well, just the sooner much, and you will get us that definition so we can expand on this. Thank you.
Yes, if you have further questions, please let us know as well.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a very too general a subject. You know, I just don't agree that everything has nicotine in it. Just, you know.
Some of that regulation,
sure.
And when you test it, there's...
Okay, thank you.
There's also mostly exploding battery. Does it include this?
I would understand that if you're vaping pure. Okay, so moving right along, our next one is we're going to open a discussion on Glenwood Acres Homeowners Association Water Board. And do we have a representative here that would like to explain that?
Yep.
Thanks so very much. Please approach the board.
Miller. President of the Glenwood Acres. I sent a letter after a support failing, and we do not have enough money. Plus, we have fewer backup people to deal with. Have a water line break or some other issue. Why we are coming to the city once again.
One other comment would be that our water master has now moved out of the area. Already in the neighborhood, but he no longer lives in the area.
Well, I provided a staff report. I can give it just a brief overview.
Please.
For the audience. So I'm going to call Glenwood Acres Homeowners Association GAHA, is how I'm going to refer to it. For GAHA Water System is a customer of the city of La Pine via a master meter at a point of delivery in the city to the supply of their water distribution system. This agreement was formed in 2014 due to failing. The system is considered a community water system that requires a small water system operator to ensure state water quality. The water system is a distribution system compromised of smaller PVC piping and among other. Has started projects for water and wastewater improvements and expansion that encompass this area that GAHA resides in. The project will include expansion of water distribution, completely redoing that system, and sections of the area as well. The anticipated timeline for these projects to be underway with construction is 2020. Typically, water distribution into the GAHA neighborhood will entail new distribution piping that will meet our city specs and standards under our purview for a regulatory authority. So I will become the operator at that time of that system. Because it'll be basically the background on the topic. I can get into a conclusion or recommendation for the time being.
Well, let's see it. What questions the council would have.
Sure, you bet.
Mike, do you have any
questions about it to begin with? But I talked to Jake. Part of it is that it's under the Cagle plan. It's planned under the Cagle subdivision work. And it's also planned, it's also covered with their grants and funding for that area. Have the everything in place.
Yeah, from what I understand, the systems aren't up to par.
Here's the Dunder, I know what it is. You know, it takes a lot of ability. If you guys need a backhoe or something.
It didn't fall under our water sewer system whenever it was installed. No, I mean, our one in the early 2000s.
The same reason why didn't Cagle get tied in? Why didn't any of those neighborhoods?
Yeah.
The water district, you know, was formed. Water and sewer districts were the first. The water district didn't go out that far, but I'm sure they had their reasons and constraints, and you know, whether it was funding or what the limitations were, I don't know. But
there's one sentence in here that I noticed. It says members of the GAHA properties are not asked to.
Association was set up, yeah, for the owners and those people with rental property.
They'd be making income off these properties.
That's why we're here. We have a
I was looking at your your tasks and who does it, your frequency and your costs. Do you feel that the city taking the water system is going to save your residents expense, or do you feel that lies to put in piping to maintain the water meters, to check the backflows, to meet every one of the meters, to do the bookkeeping, invoicing, and billing, that all of that volunteer service to you, or do you feel that that would incur additional costs to your water system?
If we wanted to get anyone else.
But I'm just saying, do you foresee that this would cost you a little more for this for you?
Frankly, I don't know what the city would charge.
Water rates would be the same as all other water rates in the city.
Correct.
Right.
But until it's put in, they have no automation where they'll have to be manually read by individual employees every the same rate as other, you know.
Until we take it over.
Right, until we take it over. Correct.
Users is about $59 a month that the city requires.
Okay.
Our goal is to, provide quality water, maintain the integrity of the system. That's what we want for our.
Yeah, just I mean, the city ultimately wants.
Act with them to maintain their breakdowns. I mean, not taking care of the meter reading and all break or something where. The city at a certain level, they can get the complete project in.
I think it's possible, but I don't think they're comparable to that, obviously. But you mentioned they're all on, an AMR system, automated meter reading system.
Correct.
You know, it's a standardized certain type. I do kind of feel the same way, Mike. You know, I love you guys, and I feel what you did, because I've been running a water system, or been part of a water system for a while now, and it takes a lot of work. Volunteering and doing that is I applaud you for that, because it takes a lot of time. This was brought up to me a year ago. We've talked about it probably. I reached out to other municipalities that have had the same kind of concepts presented to them and how those worked out. Legal about it, because I'm sure our legal has been part of these scenarios as well. And what other municipalities, expressed to me was their knowledge of how that system works. Obviously, legal was kind of on that same stance too. We had a contract that could benefit both parties. What would that contract, how much would it cost to get that contract up and running? And they said a minimum of probably $5,000 to $10,000 to get a contract in place. I don't know how much water, or much money you guys have in your funds for that kind of endeavor. Probably not a lot. I'm trying to think of what's best for my citizens, which you guys are, and you're going to be on our water system. And I'm thinking if we are to get people to want to be a small system operator, I have to do it for our level 2 system. And have to keep a certain test. A lot of times they just require you have a certain amount of time. And a lot of times they provide those classes for free too.
Or start the installation in that area and get it done
first.
It's moved into Cagle, or does it all have to be done at once?
Yes, but when we go in there, it's going to be water and sewer at the same time. We're going to do disruption all at once, not one with water, one time with sewer. There's a lot of cost savings with our contractor to put both pipes in the ground. And it's hard to say where we're going to start. We have a lift station down there for sewer, yes.
Right. Yep.
But timing with the grants we have, we can't start construction before certain steps.
Yeah, so I can help, you know, add a little to that. So back in the day when I was just a utility worker and I had some water licenses at that point, Pondo Supply lost an operator out there, their level one operator. Stepped in for about 4 or 5 months until they could fill that role again, hired, you know, have some a certain contract. I was the oversight and the regulatory operator for them. And we agreed on it. They reached out to me because they saw I had a license. I got this email, a letter in the mail one day. I was like, what's this? So I reached out to them and helped them out for a few months. I'm sure they do that. I don't know how much for.
Yeah, right. It requires the increase of our water rates.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, my question would be, do you want additional information? Do you want us to bring you back, like, more, you know, more numbers on what it actually would cost? You have our legal fees in there. We kind of know that ballpark, but we could get, you know, what it would cost for an employee to be out there. We can, they can bring back some costs of what they think.
I think the prudent thing to do, like I said, whether it was they had acquired their own water master, let's call it, you know, or whether we took over the thing, there would be additional costs. So if we knew how much cost for us to do it, because like I said, it ought to be manually read, is there would be additional costs, you know. If we knew what our additional costs would, then it would be very easy for them to weigh that. The idea is we don't want anyone to pay more than they would have to.
Hold on, septic's out there anyway, aren't you?
Where?
Correct. Right. That's an individual.
Right. You know how much do you think that you could acquire operators that we could maybe provide them the name and number, how to get in touch with somebody?
I know an entity to put on the classes for small systems. Or for, they could even provide a service too, because they do that.
All an agreement that we want to get you on as quick as we can.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next item is number 9. This is resolution number 2019-12, a resolution authorizing the Oregon Department of Revenue to exempt marijuana retailers tax imposed under the city.
Real quick, so this is the actual resolution that's going to allow us to have the state collect the tax. We discussed this in the workshop last meeting, Councilwoman Reeser, but basically, just for ease of allowing the marijuana tax, the marijuana dispensary to Salem, this allows Salem to collect the tax for us and cut us a check every quarter. The fee to do that is so nominal, it's not even basically on the radar. It's worth it. They can reconcile the amount of tax we get to, right now we have nothing that tells us if what they're giving us is correct, no way of knowing. There's also some internal issues with the way we're collecting it that is not real good. This is actually just cleaner. Most of the state does this already. In fact, we made news because we didn't do it, which I found weird. But so this is just the cleanup. This is the resolution, and I'll just go over the ordinance, allow amending our ordinances to allow us to do that, and then also the that we will be signing with the state. That is they're playing. Every city has the same IGA. They just have, I did the fees at the workshop in my staff report. I actually said I think it was less than for the setup and to get going and all the fees. It would be, I think it was $500. The overall is going to be less, like $500 a year. It's less than $1,000, I think, for us to do this. It's a one-time setup fee. Yeah, and then what happens is the fee changes. So the fee changes based on the amount of cities that participate. So it goes down. And so what they quoted me back at LOC is different than what it is now. And then when we join everybody, you get this little tiny. So I actually beefed up how much I said the fees were going to be just to be on the safe side. And it's actually much less than that. So
that's where they get the 200.
It's well worth it.
Taxpayers.
Yeah, it's actually worth it.
Oregon Department of Revenue to administer and collect the 3%.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you. So our next order of business is number 10. This is ordinance number 2004. An ordinance of the city of Lapine amending ordinance number 2016-02, and ordinance by the penalties and interest payable as accommodate the Oregon Department of Revenue. I guess we'll entertain a motion on
2019-04, an ordinance of the city of marijuana items by a marijuana retailer to modify as accommodate the Oregon Department of Revenue's administrative and collection.
We have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Ordinance passes. So our next thing that we're going to discuss is the
I make a motion that we approve the IGA for the marijuana tax collection.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed? Passes also.
Thank you.
Okay, so now I guess we'll go to number 11, which is our resolution 2019-05, amendments to the master fee schedule.
I commented on that. I provided you the staff report. There's a couple different ones all month, so we would have to amend the resolution several different times. We wanted to get it done before July 1st for fiscal year started. Use in there that you'll notice is a hydrant meter rental fee. So in the past, we've done a $125 deposit. I forget what the check amount was. $100 deposit, yep. So right now, we're going to add a fee in there for just a $100 fee for the rental of it. And that'll, you know, it talks about in here that helps with rebuilding those hydrants, the administration fees for calling, being able to the pricing on the usage of it, just have a one-time fee of $100 to rent that device. Second fees you're going to see an update on is our actual, when they go in, new installations. We just adjusted a few of those to meet what we're actually paying for them instead of losing on those meters. To pay for the meter itself and the radio device to read those meters. And the third one is a public records request. We updated the public records request back in April 24th, and we're just putting that fee under our fee schedule now, is what that one is. If you have any specific questions, we'd be happy to.
That was the rental fee on the hydrant meter?
Yes.
For what? Is that like a yearly rental or is it indefinite? Right. 3 years now?
We talked about putting a limit on time to use. We talked about a year, I think, was the limit on use. We haven't set a time frame yet, but yes, that question was asked. Should we limit the time, you know, the rental could be out?
Yeah.
We figured a year because we sometimes had to get them back so we could test them, accuracy, stuff right. Like that. And we're trying to get meters into our system now so we can put you on them and not have to call for those reads. We can pick them up that program.
Yeah.
Okay. We're even talking about having actual fill stations out in our system to where someone can go.
Yeah,
use a hybrid, get it from here. Yeah. Ping it,
yeah.
See how much they use.
Yeah.
All costs money, right?
It all costs money, that's right.
Questions or comments, I guess, is better. On the last page with the amendments for master fee schedule, number 6, 8, and 9, I feel that that might be putting an advertisement. I just kind
what
of.
What number is that?
Talking about the records request fees.
Six.
Oh, records request fees.
These are standard across the cities. The attorneys recommend this. What we're doing is if somebody comes in and I want to be clear about this. If somebody comes in map or needs a copy of the agenda or a copy of the packets, the normal stuff, day to day stuff, or they want. To know something or that anything we have available, we give those to people. We are talking about records requests. Records requests can be anything from 10 boxes of files that we have to produce or something vague that means they want everything in City Hall. I mean, these are things that, and we've never had fees in place to account for our city staff time because we are still mall staffed and it takes them away from the job. We also have to have attorney fees in there because we've never had that. And sometimes the attorneys have to go through and say, what exactly are you asking for? Because they're vague. And so if we ever get in a situation where we have an actual, you know, a records request that requires this, this is our mechanism to actually recoup the fees that's going to be needed to give them what they're asking for. They're really common. It's not something that will be abused. It's not something that's going to come up very often, but it's something we need to fix and have.
But you're basically saying that none of these could be standardized because they all would fall into
being discussed. Yeah, records requests are individualized, yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
I have a little bit of a concern with what kind of liability are...
Well, they're not records requests if they're coming in and we're just giving them a piece of paper that they're requiring. I mean, normal day-to-day requests are not records requests. These are actual, fill out the form, they're requesting documents from our city. So if it rises to that level, some of them we can fulfill, and then it's just a matter of staff time. That's always been, that's on the books, that's normal. Some of them could rise to some pretty significant staff time. This is a cleanup. I just would implore you not to be scared. It's gonna be, but if we ever do get one of those big records requests, believe me, it'll be worth it to have these on the books.
We would never know how much postage nor courier fee.
Right, and postage goes up. And yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's a normal standard inclusion.
If I come in and order a document that requires rededication, by you just send it to the attorney, or you tell me, we will send it to the attorney. The attorney charges X dollars per hour, and whatever time it takes, you're going to be charged. How are you going to handle that?
So the way a records request works is you would come in, fill out a records request form. If it's something that we can't just go like, just pull off and print for you, you're actually asking for some kind of record that we gotta find or make or do something. You'll fill out a records request. We will route it and calculate how much time, because by law, we have a certain amount of time to get it to you or explain how much. And then at that point, we'll say your records request will cost this much. And it can include some attorney fees or these things. So you will know how much your records request costs. And then if the attorney has to get involved, then the attorney does their thing, and that's what happens.
So you
don't deny records requests.
No, no, he's talking about the person.
Oh, and then the person can say, yeah, right. That's too much. When we
so
have,
say he says it's $500, right. Bucks, I say, so no, it's $500.
For instance, we have marketing companies that'll just, they do this to all the cities. They'll just send out a thing saying, we want all your employees' salaries and employees, and we want all their dates of hire. We want all this information, leaving it really vague. But what they're asking for takes hours of work for us to compile this information. And
correct.
So when you tell them how much it's gonna be, they're like, oh yeah, because we're not gonna send you that money. We're just seeing if you were gonna send this. So, you know, this is just normal standard procedure.
But my point still is, cost until you give it to them, is that correct?
We come up with an estimate, and if it's so big that, you know, the attorney's gonna give us, you know, the attorney can give us an estimate, and then the attorney can also say, no, this is, I mean, if they wanted boxes, stuff we're going to have to go through, he would say, you know, plus attorney fees or whatever.
Okay.
So.
I understand.
Okay. All right, so I guess we'll entertain.
I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2019-0.
And then second on resolution 2019-0.
Item 1605, can we get a clarification?
At the bottom of the page.
Which is the correct one?
It's 2019. Let me pull it up. I'm sure.
My page.
Yeah.
Suggestion motion.
It's
05.
Oh, that's Jake's.
I apologize.
That's Jake's message.
That's probably me copy and pasting. I'm sorry. It's 05. It's 05.
You have a wrong suggested motion.
I copied
up all
year.
That's good.
This is government at work.
Okay, so
we're trying to be helpful, but
one
it's
more
not
time. So we have a first and a second at approving resolution number 2019-05. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, so resolution 2019-05 is approved. We have no other matters. I don't think anything came up. We're open to public comments. Do we have any public comments at this moment? Please step forward.
Kitty Shields, 51 staff. You guys had some tough agenda items to deal with, and a lot of thought was put into things and done. I think we have a great council of hands that our city is in.
Thank you. I think you're a great citizen, too.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kitty.
You don't have to say that.
All right, so if there's no more public comments, then do we have staff comments? You don't have to tell us how great we are.
Okay, I won't. Last week, me and the mayor had the pleasure to go over to Salem and accept a $750,000 grant from the IFA for our wastewater construction. Well, good trip. He didn't kill me on the way back, so that's good. I didn't talk too much.
I only had to use the white knuckle handle a couple times.
Perfect.
It's all good.
My dad used it several times growing up. It's all good. Cleanup day was the same day. That went off with a good success. I'm so appreciative. Town's looking great. I think it's a good time.
Anything other than just another reminder for LOC, please let me know if you're planning. First, I think Kelly's going to go ahead and just get a block, but it'd be helpful to know if you're planning to attend.
We're reserving the rooms, and we'll bring you back prices and how much everything is at our next council meeting.
Right. Okay. Comments?
Just thank you. I was out of the country. I appreciate it. Should I mention during budget season this year?
Looking at the one of the things that they suggested is an ordinance for loaning any city equipment out. If anybody in the city, a member of the community, wants to rent equipment, we should have a lease agreement. Bar all any resident uses. I'm just telling you that they recommend that if you're going to do
it. Well, then you need an ordinance barring it.
Oh, so you actually have to have a specific ordinance that says you bar.
She needs to put an ordinance in effect that we don't do it at all, or if we're going to do it, we should.
That's a great point.
I want to know what cities are doing that.
I was sitting back home myself, and I didn't know a damn thing except for to pull two levers, and they let me.
Yeah, because I had Chamber of Commerce breakfast, and then I went over. A lot of these small cities, and they're like, yeah, we had three, can't expand. So, you know, it's really nice.
I attended the Business Oregon with Jake, and that was like pretty informative. Do they only loan money to cities, or do they loan it to private industry also?
Sometimes for...
Because IFA's, it's infrastructure for cities.
Yeah, for a private development, but they were doing like an incubator, kind of what we've talked about before, like building a building for a specific use.
That was the same thing that they did but we've done before with public development authorities.
Sure.
And they loan it to the city.
Primarily cities.
Right. So that was a successful trip. We brought back the cash. That was a good thing. Had lunch, safe trip. Everything was good.
Running out there a minute ago, my alarm system, security system.
All right, so I'm going to close the mayor and council comments. And we're going to take and go into executive session. But prior to that, I would just like to state that the Pine City Council will now meet in executive session. During this executive session, the council will review attorney-client privileged communications. The executive session is held pursuant to ORS 192-660, which permits the council to meet in executive session to consider information and records that are by law from public inspection. Representatives of the news media and designated individuals will be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience will be asked to leave the room. Representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on any of the deliberations during the executive session, except to state the general subject of the executive session, and some of this will be made during the executive session.
Want this closed?
Yes,
please.
Thank you.